were you vacationing last week?
No, I thought I mentioned in class I had a 2-day workshop on Jinshin.
Oh, that's what it was. I knew you had mentioned it. Wasn't that I didn't know you wouldn't be there, but I couldn't remember what it was.
Yeah, it was a great workshop.
Really?
Yeah. I learned a lot.
Good.
Yeah.
Hopefully things that will work with your magic, too.
Well, you know, yeah, I think everything in combination. I think for my clients, this in some ways is easier because they're not going to work with color chips and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So on that level, it's a little bit different.
Well, that's very nice indeed.
Hello.
Hello, is that Randy?
Yes.
Hi, Randy.
Hi, Alan.
Randy.
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
Is that Magnus?
Oh, yes, sir.
Hey, Magnus.
How you doing?
Wonderful. Did you get your wand keyed?
Oh, yes, sir.
Good for you. Applause from all.
Yay.
Dan's here.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm feeling especially magical today, thank you.
Oh, well, that's really nice to know. That makes my pointed up shoes curl even higher. And Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay.
Okay, only okay? Should we bless you with sun yellow boxes?
Oh, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Anyone else with us, ghost-wise or otherwise, or shall we commence to bless our candles? Let's bless. On your mark, get set, ready, child of wonder, child of flame, nourish our spirit, and protect our aim. Did you all do it with me, or was I the only one?
I did it right before class, and then I did it again with you, so it's doubly blessed.
Oh, because I only heard me.
Oh, I didn't say it loud.
Oh, you didn't say it out loud?
No, I had done it before class started.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that one out loud.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, you're always allowed to do it aloud anytime.
Okay.
You're allowed. How about that?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It's a good pun.
So, tell me about your day greeting and day endings and your exit ritual, Helen, with doing within anticipation.
I really liked it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's there's a kind of tingle feeling associated with it.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
It's like, I don't know, it made me think of Christmas and like what's going to come. That kind of feeling.
Was there any downside to it at all?
I want to say oddly no. Somehow my anticipations seem to be, it involved change, but the change felt welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked that because I noticed a couple things, and I'm not sure if it was just me or not, and that's why I asked, but we just had sort of a plumbing crisis happen today, and I noticed that that I had a lot of old hysterical, you know, from my history. That's my word for histrionic. Sort of feelings come up. And I noticed that they also have a sort of edge into anticipation, but it's different. Because the joyful side of anticipation is very light, and these are not nearly more spiky than light.
Uh-huh.
So I'm curious if anybody else had that result, if that's just my own particular phenomena. Randy, what kind of things did you notice with it?
Well, first of all, you said you had spiky?
Yeah. Yeah, when it connected with something sort of disagreeable or something.
Okay.
You know, like if we anticipate something like doom and gloom or bad or whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of anticipation.
Yeah, that sort of surprised me, but, you know, these things sometimes get triggered, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly. As for me, I really enjoyed this one a lot, too. You know, it kind of, well, it was just a feeling of being anticipatory.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about, and I know that you're struggling to find the words.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. It's not that easy to define it in ordinary language, but I sort of was looking at it from the standpoint of if you're, so say it's right before your birthday or Christmas or something or a holiday, and you have that energy which feeds you and nourishes you about going on that holiday or having your birthday or whatever, some party or something like that. And then the feeling when you actually do it, you know how different those are?
Yes.
And so I found that that level of anticipation, that very positive level, is extremely nourishing, and it sort of gives us that almost awe feeling, or again, it's not quite awe, but it's sort of like a heightened state.
It is a heightened state, and which is much different from the experience itself, which is, you know, often not as much as we hyped it to be. but the but I have to say that the anticipation that I was feeling was, it basically had to do with magic and didn't really have anything to do with, I mean, I didn't place it with anything that I'm doing now as far as like work or relationships or anything like that. It was more of I'm going to just learn more and grow more powerful with magic, and I anticipate learning more.
Okay. So at this point yet, it does not feel to you like that connection between what you're learning magically and seeing it safe change your life?
Oh, I do see magic changing my life.
Okay.
But
you're not sort of getting that sort of sense of anticipation in regards to your life as much as you are in regards, say, to your future studies and learning and so forth. Well, I think that's very natural. I think it takes a while before we open that faucet enough so that we're very aware of how much is entering our everyday life. So I like that, because you were honest about what you saw. So that's really good.
Yeah. The awareness is just out, quite just a out of reach, sort of. I guess it comes gradually.
It does. Yeah, it does. With as our doubts dispel and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's very accurate. Thank you, Magnus.
Oh, yes. did greeting went on well. Two things the greeting did to me was it was a form of activation process, and it filled me with expectation and fulfillment. I had to, in the week, help out a friend who was having problems. And yesterday, I met with her, and so after doing my thing, I met with her and asked her, how's it getting on? And she was very happy that things are getting on better, and she hopes for more and expects more to, you know, happen. It was great to me because when I talked to her before yesterday, and I told her, I asked if she would like me to help out, and she said yes. Things were a lot worse than they turned out to be, as I said yesterday. And there is a lot of hope and kind of fulfillment. So it went out good.
So are you, just so I understand you, are you saying that you're, say, doing in anticipation was affecting her as well?
Yes, because like I said, it gave me a lot of expectations.
Uh-huh.
And fulfillment.
Right, and then she was experiencing that fulfillment too?
Yes, based on what she told me yesterday.
Yeah, right, right.
Things improved better than they were the last time, which was Saturday last week we spoke.
Well, it sounds like to me that you are apparently very gifted in projecting your inner state on towards someone.
I think I am.
That's what it sounds like. Which is, it's a very nice gift, particularly as you're able to hold higher states. You can bathe other people in those higher states. Are your people charismatic healers?
Yeah. My grandma was somebody that was good with roots.
Okay.
To a point that women go to doctors, don't get pregnant, you know, barren people.
Right.
Women, and she would just get this root and prep it, give it to them, the drink, and in less than 3 months, there will be the joy. And not just that, she does it in a lot of ways. Then with religion now, before she died, you know, Christianity, she learned it the traditional way. So being one who has a faith in God, and she was a seer, she used to see visions.
Right, right. And did she lay hands on people and stuff like that?
Yes.
Right. So you must have picked up some of that, you know, like ability to transmit your energies onto somebody else, which a lot of people call, like, you know, the power of Christ or whatever. But still, it comes through us. Were you aware that you had that ability?
Well, to some extent, you know, in those years, probably when I was back home, I used to belong to a lot of what we call inner circle in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Where we had to go through some process to lay hands on people and pray for them.
Sure, sure. Okay, so you did know.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's really neat. So you can develop that even more if you choose to.
That is my hope.
Yeah. Damn.
Yes, sir. anticipation was quite apropos for me this past week, because this coming week we're going to actually launch the website I've been working on for over 2.5 years.
Wonderful.
So, but it was kind of a lightness about it. A kind of a good feeling. And I had some things that came to me this week that I don't know that they were particularly involved with the anticipation, but some things kind of came to my mind that we're learning all of this neat stuff that we can do to help and make changes and et cetera.
You're fading, Dan.
Okay, how about now?
Yeah, better.
Okay. These things that we're doing that to help change our lives and to make things better. And what came to my mind was that I don't have a plan to use these things. And I would like to develop a goal, a plan, something like goals, and specifically, you know, outline some things that I can do magically to help accomplish those goals.
We're getting there. That's going to be happening.
How much longer will that be?
Well, we want to go through tools, about 5 weeks. Well, let's put it this way. Once we finish tools, then we start setting the tarot. And that gives you the ability to analyze or to track any situation, such as your website or your business or anybody, right? And to see the factors that are involved, and you know, because we've done readings together. And so then what we do with that information is we go into spell work, where you utilize everything we've learned to set up an effect on the cause-effect chains.
Okay.
So that's sort of, you know, what you're doing is summarizing the whole sort of direction of this first course, is so that we can take all these things that we've learned and use them to develop a consistent process that works on anything we want it to influence the outcome in a desired way.
Okay, and where that came from for me was where we had talked about what my real focus should be on this website that I'm doing, and that was where I decided or felt like that I needed to you know, get some of these things going.
Well, that setting that intention is very good.
Okay.
Because that clarifies how you want this to work. In other words, you're obviously wanting this whole adventure that you're doing to further your own magical understanding and to increase other people's, say, appetite or use of that or whatever.
Right.
And so that sets a higher tone for your endeavor than if it were just, say, you know, like, just for material purposes.
Right. And I've really and truly, the material things are second, if not third, in the line of things that I want to accomplish with this.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see that, and I see that in Randy and Magnus, and I see that really in all of you all in sort of different avenues and ways, and it's very exciting, because what it tells me is that you're beginning to see that being an original researcher in terms of how does life work and how does this universe function and so forth, and who are the operating allies that we have to work with, and all that sort of thing, it's becoming more interesting to you than just sort of daily accomplishment in the mundane sense.
Absolutely.
So that's when we begin to take on the actual aspects of a magician, a seer, a sorcerer's apprentice, a shaman, because we're no longer, you see, and in that place, your attention can't get trapped as easily or as fully as if you're totally tied to the mundane. And Jennifer, how was your experience with in anticipation?
I felt kind of a forward force and a eagerness to see what was on the horizon rather than avoid it.
That's wonderful. So it puts you in the position of, say, empowered sensation about what is coming up in your life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically the antidote for anybody to what mind does to us in terms of our history invading our present moment. That's the wonderful thing to me about in anticipation. It does not actually take us out of the present moment, but it fills the present moment with a higher force and a very nourishing force.
You know, Alan, one of the things that I noticed this week, which was a big change for me, was that if my mind started to think about things that I wanted change in my life on, rather than focusing on the negative things and why I wanted them gone, I just found myself gravitating pretty easily towards what I wanted it to look like instead.
That's new for you.
Yeah, that's really new. And I think it, as part of that Christmas feeling about anticipation was, you know, I wasn't saying, I don't want to live, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking more like, this is what I have, and this is what I want to continue, and this is what I want to add.
So really what you're looking at, and I think this is quite a gift for everyone in this class, what you're saying here, and what you all input, you're really beginning to see absolutely clearly how your life has been and what has colored it. And just part of the gift of that seeing is you're abandoning that picture because it's no longer useful.
Yeah.
You see, now that's an act of power.
Yeah, it felt wonderful. And it fed into the anticipation. You know, it's like a loop.
Right. Exactly. And this is what I wanted you all to see. This is what we look forward to with every student, is to get to that point where you're willing to let go of that which does not work without any consideration about it. You don't have to analyze it. You don't. I mean, we have analyzed it so to the point of there's not a of usefulness left in it. Isn't that so?
Yep.
And so you just get to that point where you're willing to say, no more. You know, it does not do anything for me. I have no more fascination with it. And I'm going to start this sort of reaching onto something higher, even though I totally don't yet understand all what it is or how it works or anything else, but you see, that's an actual spirit choice. That's not a choice in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. You all are doing great with this. And so, because we're going into fire now, and we're going to be studying Athames, this is funny in a way, because it doesn't sound even like fire, I know, but we're going to be doing in fulfillment. Let me just double check. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. In fulfillment, yeah. And you see, it's an interesting thing about this, but desire is fire energy, okay? It is a big part of fire energy. And as such, it is the agency which gives us or produces our life force. And I know that desire has gotten bad PR in a lot of circles in our society and so forth, in all our different societies. But it actually is the fundamental energy which runs this universe. It's the creative direction, you could say. And fulfillment, which Magnus was mentioning, is sort of part of that process. Now, don't get tricked, because most society's conditioning tells us that fulfillment is an empty vessel. We don't really know what that is. So go into this completely open-minded and open-hearted and just see what it does. Set aside all our old ideas of what we think it might be, and you'll get more. So then, with our wands, there were so many things we could have played with, or anything that you did magically as we go around. If you did Omnol still, as I continue to work with some, if you did door shields or window shields, if you did touch assist, if you did sweeping or pulling with your wand, or any other message sending, just, I'm not going to go through each item. I'm going to just let you all talk about all the different things that you did, so that we have an idea of the use of the wand and all the things that it can do, because it's very useful. Particularly that touch assist is extremely useful in clearing out some of the stuff that imprisons us in belief and so forth. So, Helen, what sort of things would you like to tell us about?
Well, I didn't do anything specifically from class 14, which I missed. I did read about it, and I was excited about especially the touch assist.
Now, if you need any help with that, because people didn't come to lab, but you know, I'll be happy to get with you or anyone else that needed any additional help.
Oh, great, because I ended up working late Wednesday also, so that would be wonderful. But I did something that was just kind of fun in terms of the Omnil. When a friend and I go to the movies, invariably the movie can be half empty and someone will sit in front of us.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so I did the wand thing about no one entering the space, you know, when we went to the movies.
Got it.
And nobody sat there. So it was a little thing, but it was a lot of fun, and it was kind of reinforcing for me.
That's not a little thing.
Well, I mean, you know, I think of all the things I could have picked, it seemed kind of, well, it felt more on the fun range.
Yeah.
But it was great.
That is really good. And you see, because the reason I said it's not a little thing is because maintaining sacred space is one of the biggest things we're here to do.
Yeah.
And so if you were able to see that just a simple operation such as putting up in key and omno, what color did you use, by the way?
I use sky blue.
Okay, good. Good choice.
Oh, good.
Because that has a lot more to do with your intention than white would. Because see, your intention is developed through your understanding. It isn't a mental thing.
Okay.
You know, so you were clever in your choice, and therefore intending, increasing the force of your intention by sort of having that sky blue omno up and then blocking out anybody sitting in your space, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Oh, good. But so, for whatever reason, and I didn't analyze it, important to start with something that I didn't have, there wasn't a real sense of attachment to it, even though I wanted it to happen, that I wanted to start out small.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's really cool. And also, just to encourage you, because you're working with people, like, remind me, is it hospice type work?
Yeah.
Yeah, so isn't this with people that are quite ill or dying?
Yeah. That's okay. How you get in there.
That's yeah. What I thought. Okay. Well, you know, well, maybe you don't know, but let me sort of introduce this idea that as people are preparing to leave, to go on, say, to an out-of-body experience, and then they're going to come back, often in a very short period of time, and take on a new body, of course, we carry the patterns with us that we've been studying and being challenged by, as well as the results and our successes and so forth. So it's a wonderful time. It seems to me that the best use of a hospice period, or a period when we're sort of winding down and getting ready to let go, would be to clear up some of the locks that have held our patterns to be such, because that's what's causing us to die.
Mm-hmm.
So whether a person spontaneously healed or not in terms of suddenly leaping back into life, they are going to heal. I mean, a verifier of that, Stephen and Andrea Levine's work is all about that, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And so, well, the wand is such an incredible tool, and we do this touch assist with the wand first, but then later on you can do it with your finger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I wouldn't be comfortable bringing the wand in.
No, I know that.
Yeah.
You practice it on people outside of that environment, and then you go in and you do the same thing with your finger.
Oh, great.
You know, you're able to actually clear a lot of the physiological, psychological blocks known as engrams that are causing people to die.
Okay. So when you use your finger, would I say the same verse or?
Feel my finger.
Okay. And do I charge it in any other way, or simply the verse?
It's no verse. I didn't know what you mean by the verse.
Oh, you know, when, like fire and air, where you were, do I key my finger?
No, you don't. You're using your finger just as, your finger is already keyed. It's already keyed to you.
Okay.
If it were not, you couldn't flow fire energy, air energy, water energy. You couldn't do any of the exercises we're doing.
Oh, okay.
You know, so you don't have to key your finger. But practice with the wand, because the wand gives a little bit of a stronger focal point for us, so that you don't have to learn, you don't have to be as focusing with your intention.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole exercise is built to help us learn how to focus with our intention.
Okay.
You know, because see, you can't do it mindlessly, you can't do it mechanically. You can't say, feel my wand, feel my wand, feel my wand, feel my wand. That won't work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It has to be every time you do it the first time. Feel my wand. Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Feel my wand. Okay. Good.
Okay.
You know, and because, see, what that is doing is that the engrams block our ability to sense and feel and have emotions and so forth. They replicate other energies in us, generally fire energies, air energies, and so forth, which create disease
mm-hmm.
and blockages and so forth. And what you're doing is you're returning the person to actually a heightened awareness of their physicality and so forth.
Okay.
Which breaks up engrams.
Okay. That's great. I have a couple questions about that. One of the things that came up in this workshop last week that fascinated me comparing it and with the magic is we looked at they used five elements, you know, air, water,
metal,
kind of thing. And they associated each finger with different elements.
Okay.
Would it make a difference which finger I use?
No.
No, okay.
It wouldn't. Generally, your index finger.
Okay.
Just because they're associating each finger with a different element does not mean that that finger is a different element.
Yeah.
You know, and you understand that even though Chinese medicine works with five elements, that does not mean we live in a five-element universe.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
You see, what those people may not know is that originally Chinese medicine was based on four elements.
Really?
Well, there are only four seasons, my dear.
Well, I know. I just don't know how the Chinese thing.
Well, that was a decision that was made actually not that long ago in time, because in the ancient books it was all four elements. What they did was they took the excess of every season, the midpoint, what we call the solstice and the equinox, and they pulled it out and created a fifth element called Earth.
Uh-huh.
Because Earth, in the old books, it says Earth feeds all. That means the excess of every season feeds you. And so what they did was they pulled the excess out and they put that as the harvest time, Earth, late summer.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the excess of our efforts, so to speak, and that stomach and spleen energy.
Yeah.
And they did that to accommodate the fact that there were, from their perspective, five yin organs and five yang organs in the body.
Okay.
They said, well, we've got to have a five-element system to match that.
Huh. Okay.
So, you see, now I've told you probably more than your teachers knew.
It sounds like it.
Hello.
Yes, yes, Magnus. Or is that Randy?
It's Magnus.
Okay.
This is so funny. You know, now you are talking about it. It got me thinking, you know, when you were addressing the history of the elements, I said, wow, could it be why back home the people we call traditional worshippers or traditional religion, they had 8 days in a week, and each of them, when you break it in half, is usually 4 days put together, named after whatever God, aka Apo, or Odia. And in those days, like they tell in history, each of, you know, these named gods were kind of, they have a purpose, they have what they do. So if you say you are going for wedding, they'll advise you don't do it on a kid there.
Right.
I don't know. Kind of like I try to relate a kid with fire or something.
What is that tradition, Mike? What is that tradition?
Yeah.
No, what is the name of that tradition?
It's just like the modern day worshippers observe 7 days, you know, Sunday is the day for worship.
Okay. So that's not Congo. That's not part of the Congo tradition.
No. Basically Nigerian.
Okay, Nigerian. Okay. The reason I asked you is that the Congo has a whole different layout. And I want to make sure you weren't referring to that. Because they use what's called a vertical circle. Did you know that?
I didn't know.
See, where we use a circle that's the four directions, east, south, west, north.
Yes.
They use a vertical circle that's east overhead, which is the sun energy, and then west, which is descending, and then down below the earth. It's a standing circle. And their whole cosmogony is based on that.
It could somehow relate to this that I'm saying, you know, how things vary in different regions, or, you know, but basically they trust so much on that and do certain things on certain days based on the name of that day.
Yeah.
It might be Monday this week, and the rotation will fall on Tuesday next week.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that system is, but it obviously it has to do with the energetic quality of that particular day or opening.
Yeah, but it's basically for their rituals, or they basically divided their worship days in 4 days. But it rolls over to 8 days in a week.
Yeah, I understand. I don't know, because I don't know what their calendar is.
Okay.
Because, see, the Aztec calendar is totally different, for instance, than either our solar or lunar calendar. Different people had different calendars. Do you understand?
Yes.
And so it depends on what the calendar system that they're working with is, and I don't know what that, I don't know what the Nigerian one is. But you may figure it out yourself as we go along.
Yeah. I will look into it more.
Sure. So, Randy, what kind of things did you do with your wand or any other magical things you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I put up door shields, took down door shields.
Did you have a chance to have them tested? What did you key them to?
I just used blue, powder blue, and I don't know if I keyed them.
It sounds like you didn't.
No. No, I guess I didn't key it.
So, okay, so you put up powder blue door shields.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a generalized because you didn't key it.
Yeah, I didn't key it.
Right. But what? How did that affect you? Because were you the only one coming and going, or?
Yes, I was the only one coming and going.
Okay, so how did look back over the time period when they were up, and see if there's anything that stands out?
Oh yeah, it stands out that I felt that there wasn't going to be anybody coming in that door. even when I was away.
So, what gave you that feeling that nobody was going to come in?
Well, because I had the shield up, and well.
Okay, so when you came in,
yeah.
How did you feel? Okay, so you'd walk through your door and you'd be in your house.
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel? How long were they up? A day, 2 days, what?
Yeah, a day.
Okay, so that's at least a segment of time that you can look at. What
yeah.
was different when you were back home during that day?
Well, I was aware of the shield being there.
Okay.
And you know, and it's like when I would go through the door, I would feel like I was just kind of passing through the shield.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
But nothing other than that stands out for you as to your state of beingness when you were in the house.
Well, and my state of beingness in the house was that I felt more secure.
Okay. Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Do you feel more secure when you're in your head or in that which you know?
In that which I know.
Okay. So that's what you did. You reinforced your knowingness. Because you put up a generalized powder blue shield. So what you were doing is screening out basically all energies except people that were high in their sense of understanding. And I probably the reason that you felt that nobody else was going to come in is that most people don't live in that state. You mean you might have been surprised and come home that day and found three yogas sitting in your house. If they could have come in.
Yeah. They could have come in.
Yeah, or else one of your friends sitting in your house in a total state of shock, being unable to access their lower states at all. Or something like that. So you might want to try it where you specifically key it to something.
Yes, I will key it.
Yeah, just because it's gives you a little more to, you know, to look at in terms.
Yeah, and I wanted to try the touch
assist.
I didn't have anybody to try it on, and it was a busy week at work, and and I spaced out calling Helen, and Helen and I really can agree on a time to get together anyway.
Well, you know, with touch assist, all you have to do is grab anybody and say, do you have any pain or blockage or anything you'd like improved or enhanced or...
Okay.
And do it. It doesn't take such specialization, really.
Okay.
You can just walk down the street and ask for volunteers.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Magnus, anything you did with your wand? How was keying it? How did that go?
The keying was fantastic. I know I'm the late comer, but I keyed it and it was great. And I used it to send messages.
Oh, good.
One of them I mentioned of the result.
Oh, with the lady?
Yes, the lady, because it was the conflict between her.
I see. Okay. So you were using your wand to project that to her, too?
Yes.
Good.
So I got that done and did it a lot of times. And I did the shield, the O'Neill. It was great. It kind of increased my confidence. Because whenever I'm at work, I'm always kind of walking around on the road, driving. So I was accident-free, more alive, and things like that. And on the second week assignment, I did the half, and even the half shield.
Right.
I practiced with my finger also.
Oh, good.
Then when I got to, I didn't get to do the healing. It's just like I was listening, you know, when you were saying it. It was a busy week. I never got to do that, but I got to do the half shield, get fellow employees from, and sometimes we bug each other.
Sure.
So, yeah, and it was great. I even came up to the door shield. I was in the process of doing it, but I kind of figure I need some clarification because it was mentioned something about using the ashes to kill. I get confused as if I needed to point at it wasn't very clear.
Okay. What was not clear, Magnus?
Huh?
What was not clear about door shields?
Is keying it.
Oh, keying how to key them?
Yes, with ashes, I think.
No. The ashes are just if you have your fireball ash saved.
Okay.
If you're putting up door shields and window shields to keep out something or somebody or cold or whatever, it can just strengthen the shield to put a line of just a very slight amount of fireball ash on the sill or the threshold. It just locks it in better.
Yes.
But the keying is just like an enamel. You see whatever you don't want to come in bouncing off the shield.
Okay. I think I got it confused somehow. Thinking is I think I did that with the first part of when I did see my wand and doing shield, things like that. See them bouncing off and problems, you know, staying away from them. Like I said, it worked out fine. But I was thinking in terms of the door shield and window shield, that's the 1-2 process of the class, which basically I was trying to do it so that I can discuss it in class today and get to that point.
All right. Yeah. Well, all you do, like, say, for instance, you want to put up shields on your door and all your windows.
Yes.
You just go one at a time, put the wand up at the top, face your palm towards the opening, hook the energy to either clear white or powder blue, just like you would put up a roller shade in the top of the window or the door, so that you've got it hooked in on the right-hand side and your wand is near the right, and then you extend the beam from the wand across to the left of the opening, and then just roll it down by moving the wand down to the bottom, you know, through all the way down from top to bottom of the opening, and then hooking it in at the bottom. So that's how you put up the shield. And if you're going to do all the windows and the doors, go around and do every one of them, and then key all of them at once. I did it to keep out noise. You can do it to keep out any sort of air vibrational thing. Is that, you understand?
Yes, I do. And like it says, I don't know if I'm, because I'm not with the paper I was working on, seeing all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Since I do them separately then.
Yeah, you do them separately, but you key them all at once.
At the same time.
Right. Yeah, because you're keying them all to do the same thing.
Yes.
Now, if you're just putting up a door shield, then you put it up and key it.
Okay.
If you just want to keep somebody out or keep some attitude of somebody out, such as their criticism or their negativity or their possessiveness or their jealousy. But if you have two doors that people would come in, then do both and key them alike. If you have three doors, do all three. Is that, you understand?
Yes, I do.
Good. Dan, anything you did with your wand you would like to share?
The only thing I did with the wand was send a message, and I don't have any response out of that yet. I did some half shields just for some irritating things like some noise. That worked real well.
Good. There's that exercise in the notes, in the homework notes, about half shielding a scary movie. That's kind of a fun one to do. And if you don't want to, say if it's just on TV and you can't rewind it, since scary movies tend to be scary throughout, put up a half shield and just stay there and watch it and see how much it affects you, or any kind of a movie, and then get up and move and then sit back down, because see, that'll break the half shield if you move, and then see how it affects you. Or watch the movie for a bit first, then put up a half shield with your wand, and then keep watching and see if it feels different.
Okay.
Because, see, that way you're blocking the perceptions or the incoming energies even from the TV. Being an air shield, it should work very well, because obviously those are just air energy communicators, you know, coming at us.
Right.
However, because, you know, you're going to launch your website and all.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. What could you do?
I do want to put an on mill around it.
Well,
for protection.
Yeah, that's a little hard to do because it's not a physical thing.
Well, that was what I was thinking. If I could pull it up on the have it on the screen of my monitor and put it around the monitor, maybe.
I would put up a window shield. Stephanie, what would you do in that case? Oh, well, they haven't started that yet. Yeah, we'll have things for that when we get to Simulacra Magic. But in the meantime, what I would do is put up a half shield on your TV monitor. Not a half shield, a window shield.
Uh-huh.
Because you've got it there and you're looking at it. So if you put up a shield, and then you say, okay, I don't want any, negative, well, it's not like exactly negative feedback, but the main thing, what is it you want to protect? You want to protect it from, say,
someone else coming in and trying to overpower and take away my idea.
Okay. Yeah, that can be best done by Simulacra. Stephanie is right, later on. But for now, I would just put up a window shield and key it just so, just like you just said.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because anybody that is going to, and as you do it, what you want to do is you want to key it to every monitor all over the world. You're putting up the shield on your own monitor, and it's like protecting the view of your website, but you're keying it as anybody that looks through their monitor viewing your website is not going to do these things.
Okay. All right, good.
That's about the best you can do.
Good.
At this point.
Okay. I'll do that. Is there anything that's the opposite of an Omnil that you would broadcast rather than keep out?
Yes. It's called the Come Along. And there are other broadcasters, all broadcasters, okay? Attractors. But with what you've got available to you right now, if you want to attract something, you've got a keyed plate, right? No, not
yet.
You don't. You don't yet. We'll get to that.
3 weeks.
Yeah. We do come along, right. No, four, a little more than 3 weeks, because we got two thalmies, two chalices, and then, or something like that. Anyway, but it is possible.
All right.
And let's see, Jennifer, anything you did with your wand?
Craig came home with a sore hip. It was how you get you hurt, you're whining, and you had to go to the chiropractor and all that. So I smoked him and I used touch assist on the wand.
Oh, cool.
And he said it didn't help him, but the next morning he was, he'd forgot about it.
That's pretty funny, Jennifer.
And I know on the notes it said you can't touch assist yourself.
You can, but it's a little hard, but most people wouldn't be able to play the game, but you can if you can.
I did, and it worked. Or something happened.
Yeah, no, it worked. You can touch assist yourself. The only reason we say that don't touch assist yourself is that to do that, it really takes your ability to shift back and forth between personas. Because you have to, when you do the touch, you have to be the magician set. And when you do the response, you have to be the patient. Some people can do that without getting crazy inside. But other people might, it's sort of like might lose their anchor, so to speak, a little bit and feel a little psychotic.
Listen to this. So, I did it Monday. I'm on my right side.
Yeah.
I got the cap tooth. I got a sore hip, a sore knee. And these pain kind of floats up and down in me.
Right.
So I started in the top of my head, and I used a solid touch where I could feel it good.
Yeah, good.
And I went down over my jaw, past my hip, into my knee. So then, it was either Monday or Tuesday night. I was laying in bed, kind of half awake or whatever, I guess. And there was something that lifted up out of me and floated to the southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And things have been better since. It's almost like I got my right side is symmetrical to my left side now.
Sure.
It's not stressed in that.
Yeah, that was probably an engram. And you may have broken it loose by doing that.
Do I have to worry about it coming back?
Not really.
No? Oh, good. So I wonder about that, but I don't want it back. So I try not to wonder about it.
Well, that's it. That's it. Don't feed it. Don't go there. Just enjoy how you feel connected. Also, you can sweep yourself with the wand too,
I did that.
Yeah.
I didn't get as good effect as the other though.
Well, no, touch assist is a very powerful technique. You know, and it's very useful. Generally speaking, I don't tell people to do themselves because a lot of people would not get a result, and then I would be giving out information that would be erroneous in that because not everybody would get the same result. But it's good that you did.
I filled that one with powder blue before I did it.
Mm-hmm. That would be useful.
Okay.
Either white or powder blue for an engram. Powder blue, it sounds good, though. Because an engram is basically misunderstood information. It's a misunderstood experience that then gets charged with a lot of feelings on top of it. And so if working with powder blue, it would tend to be more able to correct the misunderstanding, which sounds good to me. Okay, so asamas. What I'm going to do is go through all the information about asamas, and then I'll leave it up to you all if you want to key them right now in class or if you want to key them on your own. But I'll tell you exactly the whole process. It's really very similar to keying your wand, except that you do two more steps. You start out exactly the same as the wand. You charge your fireball exactly the same. You pull the Asami through the smoke exactly the same, except you have to do both sides, since a wand doesn't have sides, but an Asami does. And then you hold it up in the smoke and pull the smoke all the way up till it goes over the tip. And, of course, feel the energy of your Asami before you key it and after. And then the two extra steps you do are just after you've gotten the smoke to stick really nicely, being careful, of course, to pull it from north to south through, and then holding it with your two fingers and pulling the smoke up through it and over it so it comes off the tip. Then you stroke the blade 5 or 6 times on one side with a magnet from the guard to the tip, again, making sure it's pointed to the north, and then turn it over and stroke the other side with the magnet 5 or 6 times. And then the last thing you do is hold it over your sun candle, not too close, 3 or 4 inches above the flame, with two fingers just like you did in the smoke, and pull sun yellow through it until the sun yellow energy comes off the tip. And that's all there is to it. It's just that easy. So let's talk about the use of an Asami and storing it and so forth, and then we'll see what you all want to do in terms of keying it. Of course, you want to key it, don't get me wrong, but whether you want to do it here and now in class or on your own, you all have gotten pretty good at this. You're going to get better because we're going to do chalices and then plates after that. So the nice thing about an Asami is once you key it, it will stay keyed pretty much forever unless you grind on it, sharpen it, resharpen it, or put it in, like if you threw it in a fire, it might unkey. Or if you beat on it with a hammer or something, it might unkey. Otherwise, it'll stay keyed. We do keep them in a case, a sheath, and you do, if you're storing it on your altar, want to keep it in a north to south direction, pretty much the same direction you key it in. You want to lay it on your altar in that direction, alignment, tip to the north, handle to the south. Just keeps the energies more carefully aligned in it. There also is an emergency way of keying an Asami. Because if you're traveling somewhere, like for instance, particularly on a plane, you can't carry your Asami. If you really want to, the best way to put it in a suitcase is laying flat against the bottom of the suitcase. Because then when they lay the suitcase down and x-ray it, it generally won't show. But if you really like your Asami and you don't want them to take it away, best leave it home. And then if you get somewhere and you need one, just grab any knife, kitchen knife, whatever. And when we talk about a knife with a full tang, what we're talking about is almost all knives now have that. At least they have the blade and the handle are all one piece of steel, is what that means. And that piece of steel of the blade comes all the way up into the handle. They used to, for a period of time, make knives that the blade part ended about halfway up the handle. I don't know if they do that much of that. If you look at the typical Boy Scout knife or any of those kind of knives, kitchen knives, you can see the steel all the way up. It's the same configuration as the handle. So to emergency key a knife, just take it and point it to the north, the tip to the north, and hit the south end or the handle end with an iron skillet or a hammer. And that'll shock key it. And that keying will hold anywhere up to a day, perhaps. It won't hold much longer than that. But if you need to cut lines on somebody or put up a nominal for somebody or yourself and you're away, that's what you do. You emergency key an Asami.
Do you keep it pointing it north while you hit it?
Yeah. You keep it, the point of it is pointed north and you're hitting it from the south. And the Asami, unlike the wand, will handle a number of different energy colors, not just fire energy. It'll handle water energy, too. It's best for fire energies. It will even handle air energies, but it's not a good idea because they will, if you do that too much, it'll deteriorate the blade, pit it, and so forth. Because they force to, like the air bands or, but there's, the one air color that you can pretty well do is light electric blue. It's a pretty unusual color. But then if you look at that band in your notes, what they call the color V or the energy colors, you get electric blue, you get water blue, deep blue purple, deep red, purple, deep red, red, orange, red, yellow, orange, sun, yellow. That's, the Asami will handle all those different colors. Now, if you have an old knife, before they used oil fire quenching, when they make them, the blade, some of them will not handle electric blue. Any modern knife will. But there was, when I say old, I'm talking about 15th century and earlier. Other than Damascus and some of those exceptional blades, ninja steels and so forth. But your more primitive steels were not oil quenched and beaten in fire with oil quenching between, and they won't handle electric blue. So you have this chart on, I think it's on your page 58, gives you all the different colors and what they're good for, and that's very useful because fear is there and all kinds of things, light blue is fear. But electric blue we haven't used before. You've got the color chip. Basically, it's the color in the bottom of a flame. It's that very unusual color that you get, particularly in a gas flame or an electric lighter flame. A candle flame will do it, but it's harder to see. Real easy to see in a lighter or a gas. If any of you have gas stoves, it's just very easy to see. And that's what we call galactic fire energy. That's actually the same energy that stars, distant stars, emit. So if you're ever out at night and you need a source of electric blue, just pull from any star. Now, we've said don't pull from the sun, that is true. But you can pull from a star without any problem. And electric blue is the color that magicians use for defense or for shielding. There's a number of ancient instruments that handle it, such as the sword, the staff, the ankh. Anybody not know what an ankh is?
I don't.
Okay. It's a magical tool that uses galactic and earth energies. What it looks like is the glyph for the planet Venus. It's a circle. It's generally made out of ironwood, lignum vitae, or some very dense hard wood. And it's a circle, and then a line or a staff coming off the circle, and then a crossbar at the bottom of the circle. So you say it's a circle mounted on a cross, except the top member of the cross is the circle. Is that clear to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, how do you spell that?
Ankh,
is that?
A-N-K-H.
Oh, okay.
And how you use that is you hold the circle in both hands. And through the crossbar, you pull energy that comes to the planet that's emanated around the planet through the Great Pyramid, the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid. This is a little complex, but that's all right. All you know is you pull Earth energy through, but it's actually galactic energy circling the Earth through the crossbar. And it whips into the circle part that you're holding and goes, spins round and round till it builds up, and then you shoot it out of the staff end. I've built ankhs, but this is, you all, we're not going to use them in this course. That's advanced magic. But that's what it's all about, anyway.
Okay.
So then some other things about electric blue, because it is the nucleus energy of the hydrogen atom. And of course, as you know, the hydrogen energy exists all throughout space, throughout the universe, as so therefore does electric blue. It's a primary energy that we use particularly in ritual. The reason being that when you say take your Asami and you're doing ritual and you invoke the old ones or the four directions, similar to or the winds, either one, and Sky Father and Earth Mother to bring them into your circle, electric blue will only work from our level upwards. It will not work on the lower bands, i.e. in the more primitive bands, chaotic and all kinds of other being or energies that could come in and contaminate a circle. They can't respond to it. It doesn't operate in those lower bands at all, or lower realms, I should say. So it's a delineator that helps you get just who you want in your circle. And it's ideal for banishment, it's ideal for shields of a very high order. Because if you put up electric blue shields properly, and this would be more than just a single envelope, what's called triple envelope, around your house, And even if you get hit by an extraterrestrial spaceship, which has happened, in fact, I had it happen to my house one time, it will glance it off. It will hold. In fact, in Boulder, we got hit. It was like amazing because I was sitting there when it happened, and it was like seeing a lightning bolt hit your house, except it glanced off. It was a cloud-free sky, totally blue sky. And in the paper, the next day, they talked about how this strange lightning phenomena out of a cloud-blue sky had destroyed a power station in North Boulder, and that was that hit from a spaceship that glanced off the AMLO around our house and hit at such an angle that it hit the power station in North Boulder and destroyed it.
Alan, if people's homes are in danger of fire, of being burned, would this kind of shield keep that from happening?
Yeah, but you want to put it up in that case in a much bigger, you talk about like some forest fire?
Yeah.
One of our students did that in Colorado, in fact, when there was a fire up in, I think it was in Loveland. And they put it up about where the fire was, which is about 2.5 miles from their house, and keyed it against the fire, and the fire never came any closer than that.
That's great.
So, any questions about electric blue? We've not used it up to now, but now you will use it. It's very hard color to replicate in the physical planes, but you've got it on your color with your color chips. It's that really odd-looking, sort of highly reflective color chip. Or you can pull from the bottom of the gas flame, too. Now, the Asami, unlike the wand, we have to concern ourselves with the different patterns that you use with it, since it has a blade and a point and so forth. Is if you look, all those patterns are described. There's a beam, and in that case, if you're putting up omnals, you would hold it just like you did the wand, facing east and so forth, and do the three circles, but you would use one of the fire colors, yellow, orange, red, orange, deep red, bright red, sun yellow, or electric blue. And so you pull from a color source and put a beam out off the tip of the Asami. Well, in that case, then the blade is held in a position flat to the earth. And the cutting edge is forward in the direction you're cutting towards, to the right, in other words. And your finger, your first finger, your pointing finger, is on the flat of the blade. And, of course, your hand is on the handle of the knife. All the rest of the fingers in the thumb. And that gives you an energy beam off the tip, just like you did with your wand, except in fire colors. But if you want a edge-on sort of broadcasting sheet of energy out from the blade, then you hold the knife vertical, put your thumb on the back, and you broadcast the energy outwards away from you, and that gives you like a shield or curtain going outwards, flat like the blade, the flat of the blade, projected out off the edge. Whereas a flare, there are two types of flares. That's where you hold, again, the knife vertically, more or less, but you put your thumb, and you can point the blade either to the right or to the left, depending on what you're doing. And you put your thumb on the side of the blade. And then the flare goes away from you off of the flat of the blade. Straight out for a normal flare, and for a generalized flare, if you had a double blade knife, it would be 180 degrees. With a single edge knife, it's about 120 degrees. Because it doesn't project off the back of the blade as much as it does off the edge. Off the edge, it goes straight out to the side of you. Like, that's what I'm saying. If you had a double edge, you could see it as you're putting the flat of the blade away from you. Your thumb is on the middle of the flat of the blade, and the energy is going out 180 degrees to either side and all the space in between. Half circle. Any questions on these patterns? There's a video on them, a clip on them. Practice those patterns. Yes, Helen, go ahead.
I just had no questions.
Okay. Practice those patterns so you get used to them.
Okay.
And then, like I say, on those, it's just like doing the wand, but be careful, like you did with the wand, that you don't put up three circles that are not clean circles, because it would affect you if you didn't get them good and clean. So always, after you put up your three circles, take a moment and see how you feel before you key it. And do keep in mind that just like with the wand, you had to concern yourself with your hand position. With the Asama, you concern yourself with the blade position. It isn't so much an issue other than that your finger is on the back of the knife blade. It isn't a question of which way your hand is facing as much as you always want the cutting edge forward in the direction you're moving the knife, as you scribe the three circles. And remember, if you want to put it up around your property, project that beam all the way out. If you want to put it up around an animal or another person or your car or something else, like your altar or whatever, project the beam around that object as you do the Asami around you. So the first circle is easy. The second circle, be sure that the knife blade keeps facing forward as you come down across in front of your knee. So you have to turn the knife with your hand to keep it going, cutting forward. And the last circle, as you reach back, same deal. As you come down, make sure that blade keeps going forward, the cutting edge. And as you come up the other side, that blade has to keep leading you, so to speak. Don't let the knife lean to the side either. As you're coming up overhead, keep it straight up and down. And then key your omnil just like you did with the air omnil, seeing whatever you want, bouncing, don't want in, bouncing off of it, or flowing around it, or push out. See, these are great for anger, resentment, frustration, pain, whatever. Now you got a fire tool, so you want to be putting out of it or keying out fire things that affect in fire, such as fire. I mean, there's your answer, Helen. It's a fire tool.
Right.
Thieves, assaults, radar. Be specific in how you key. In other words, you would not want to key an electric blue omno against, say, being around your car, being seen by police people, because they'll run into your car. But you might want to key it against the radar detecting your car, I have a funny story about that. Would you like to hear a funny story, anybody?
Sure.
Sure.
Uh-huh. One of our students, or two of our students, husband and wife, are traveling on the Denver Tollway. Some of you all would know about that. It's a toll road that has these toll gates, and if you have a special pass, you don't have to stop at the toll gate because something in the toll booth reads your pass that's somehow attached to your car or something, and you automatically pay or something. You all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so they had an Omno, electric blue Omno up around their car. And they went off to and through this, they traveled that road quite a bit. So they put up their envelope and then they're going to use the tollway and they go through the first time and it doesn't ring the little thing that registers that they've paid the toll. And they go to the second one, it doesn't say, oh my God, something's wrong and we're going to get caught or get in trouble. So they thought, well, wonder if it could be the envelope. So they took down the envelope and then went through the third one and it rang. So, just interesting anecdotes. Half shields are just exactly the same. Oh, and how do you take them down? Of course, you're almost just like you did. Cut them. Obviously, with the blade towards the direction you're cutting, but just as you did with the almost. The third circle first, the second circle next, and the first circle next. Just the same way. Overhead from right to left, and then reach behind you and cut all the way down to below the horizon with one chop, and that cuts number two and number one down.
Does it matter which way that you have your forefinger, if you're doing a beam or a flare or whatever, do you have to match the same way that you put it up, or does that have anything to do with it?
Well, now, if you're talking about onmos, cutting down?
Yeah,
you would have your forefinger on the back of the knife just like you put it up.
Okay, but if you put it up with a flare?
You don't. You always put it up with a beam.
Oh, okay. All right.
If you want to flare your omno to silver it, you do that. You don't do that with your asami. You do that by seeing it happen. In other words, it's not an actual asami operation to flare or silver an omno. And even though it's in your notes for putting up three-layered omnos, I believe it's in your notes. Yeah, multi-layered omnos. I'm going to save that for next time because that's a fairly complex operation. I want you all to get practice putting up regular ones first so you don't get confused. That half shields are exactly the same as with the wand, except you have you use the flat flare position with the thumb on the side of the knife. And let me see. Oh yeah. Okay. And those you do with the back of the. I recall. I'm pretty sure it's with the back of the blade going forward instead of the edge. Let me see what it says. Oh, well, maybe we don't do half shields. Yes, we do. Half shields. Flare, thumb on the back of the blade, cutting edge facing away. Actually, the cutting edge is facing to your left. Well, this says thumb on the back of the blade, cutting edge facing right. Okay, yeah, okay, so then it does. The cutting edge goes towards you with the direction of you putting up the half shield. I was wrong. So follow what it says in your notes. And you can, generally your half shields are best in electric blue. And you can do them concave or convex. And they work even better than air half shields for wasps, hornets, and that sort of thing, which are pretty fiery. Now let's just one. Oh, door shields and window curtains. Again, exactly fire colors, but exactly the same. Now these are permanent. They will not come down till you take them down. And you want to key them. But hold your knife so that your thumb is on the back of the blade, and the blade is towards the opening. The edge of the blade is towards the opening. And you're using a beam projected from right to left. And you get a little bit of a flare off the blade, edge of the blade, too, as you come down. And those are very strong. And, of course, to cut it down, use the same energy color that you used to put it up, and cut an X, corner to corner, corner to corner. Top right, lower left, top left, lower right. And it'll cut that right down. But if you put up all your windows, a bunch of windows and doors, you have to cut each one down individually, of course. But you key them all at once, after you put them up. Now, in this particular case, if I were putting up door windows, window shields, door windows, yes, that's very intelligent.
That'd be good.
But if I were putting up window shields for heat, to keep heat in, I would put up probably red or red-orange first, and then I would do a second pass with silver on the inside of that to keep heat in. On the other hand, in the summertime, if you want to keep heat out, again, I would do bright red or red orange, but I would put up silver first and then do the red orange behind that. So use silver on the outside or use silver on the inside, whichever you want to deflect the heat back towards the inside or towards the outside.
Could you use a set up an omni using this omni for pest control?
Yes.
What color would you use for roaches?
They're pretty fiery. I would use yellow orange. You know how they run around like crazy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Now, if you have the water roaches, you know those great big ones that move slow? I would use deep red.
Okay.
Because that's the color they are anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, they are.
I would probably do shields. Door shields and window shields for them. No, because they come in through the walls too. No, you're right. Use normal. Be sure and push them out when you key it, as well as keeping them out. Because if they're already in, you don't have to get one and throw it outside the omno. If you have one, you could do that. But, sometimes they're hard to lasso. So you may have trouble running around the house with a lasso trying to get one and throw it out. But just see them being pushed out. That'd be an interesting experiment, better than the one I did in New York City, where I meticulously sealed every crack, crevice, and so forth with silicone. It worked, but it took days to do it. Any other questions? Fire is a cool thing to be using. You can do a lot of things with it. If you want a nice party omnal, put up a yellow-orange omnal around yourself and key it to keep out depression or any low energy. And because they glitter, they're nice, they attract people. People enjoy people that have yellow-orange omnals up at parties.
Put it up with the embalming, would it stay up?
Oh yeah, it'll stay up until you take it down.
Does it attract a certain kind of people or just all people?
It attracts the best in people.
Okay.
It makes them fun oriented. It's better than smoking some of those weird substances people like to roll into cigars and cigarettes.
The stuff that's legal.
It's legal, right. Uh-huh. And also it doesn't have sidebands. It might increase people's appetite a little, not as much as true redwood though. So people won't get the total munchies and eat you out of house and home. Well, electric blue is really a cool color to play with. And also, next week we'll learn how to do banishments. And you'll know more than all the priests that study this in the Catholic Church. And this is literal. I've done this. I have cleaned out totally bizarre houses and edifices of destructive spirits and so forth. I mean, spirits that were killed, well, they actually never killed anybody, but they tried. And people would, if they slept in the bed in one of the bedrooms where it was really foully contaminated, they'd end up in the middle of the night, and I'm talking about people that thought they knew all things, kind of things about ghosts, tried it, and they'd end up with the sheets wrapped around their neck choking to death.
Yeah.
And these guys were pretty malicious, just like Ghostbusters, it was that kind of stuff, because I was on the way down there when they contracted me to come down and clean up the house. On the way down there, they attacked me in my car. I mean, miles from the house, I had never even been there before. They got a bead on me just through my intention of coming. It was pretty funny. But we got rid of them.
That's good.
So you all will learn how to do that next week. And lots of healing things, too. So, in anticipation, I bid you good night.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Hey, Alan, I have one question about engrams.
Yes.
I got the, I forget the name of it, the...
Science of Bible?
The science?
Science of Bible.
Right. But when I was reading about the engram, it wasn't as clear to me as I needed. Would Dianetics be more foundational?
What is it you wanted to know?
Well, I guess they've been really intriguing me when you've mentioned them here, in class.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether there's more to know about them or whether...
Where did you read? Let's see. Let me think. Where the Sweetie, do you remember what page it is where the definitions are? Helen wants to, she's got Science of Survival, and she was trying to read up on engrams. She couldn't, it wasn't clear to her, and I was trying to remember where that part that had the definitions that we did for class, for the other class.
Oh. Was it from that book?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe Dianetics was
No, it's pretty clear, but I'm not sure where it was in the book.
I'll email it to you, Helen. I don't have it right now, but I'll look it up and email it to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I did look in the index also.
Did you look up secondaries?
No, secondaries.
And locks. It's all together in one chapter that has information on engrams, secondaries, and locks.
Oh, okay. Let me try that. It just felt when I was reading it like he'd explain them somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. That, it is explained. But, I mean, Stephanie read a lot of the book before she got to that. I mean, because it's kind of technical stuff in a way.
Yeah, it's a whole different vocabulary.
That is for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, hang on a second. She's looking to see if she can talk.
Oh, okay. Is he still alive?
No.
Oh, he died?
Well, there's some scuttlebutt that some of the Scientology people killed him.
Oh, really?
And kept it a secret that they had done so for many years. And kept...
Oh.
And kept publishing books under his name.
That's amazing.
Okay, look on in the second part of the book,
mm-hmm.
Book 2, Dianetic Processing.
Book 2 or Part 2?
Well, it's in the same book, but they call it Book 2.
Oh, okay.
The first part talks about the chart, and the second part talks about how to process someone.
Okay.
If you look on chapter 3 in book 2, The Mechanics of Aberration,
okay.
It's like page 28 in my book, which is like the third from last page in that chapter.
Okay.
It says an engram comes about when the individual organism suffers an intense impact with mast.
Okay.
And that'll give you a definition of all engrams, secondaries, and locks.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Yes, indeed. Have fun. Well, I mean, it'll give you more of an understanding of what we did when we cleared a bank chain.
Uh-huh.
And then what I did, because obviously you still had an engram in MEST, which
uh-huh.
is why I treat physically afterwards.
Yeah.
Because the bank clearing will take care of any of the N-theta engrams, but it won't necessarily clear up the secondaries or the ones that are in the physical body.
Okay.
And so that's what we do, is we clear those too, you know. And sometimes they break up, you know, because you notice that it didn't seem to go away right away.
Right.
And that's because engrams don't, they oftentimes, like Jennifer was talking about, it took a while for hers to float away.
Okay.
They sort of break up. And, well, also, when we do body walks inside in both basic and intermediate shamanism, what we'll learn how to do is to actually go in out of body inside of ourselves or somebody else and mock up tools and actually, you know, sweep away engrams and stuff like that.
Oh, good neat. Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of techniques. It's just to find which works for any particular individual, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I had a lot of legal stuff this week.
How was that?
Well, you know, with probate, and it's just, you know, very up in my life, but it's much, much better. There's still kind of an immediate reaction, but it doesn't last as long. It dissipates much faster.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, some of that is also in subliminal, you know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's bank-oriented. We don't, not everything, it's not that all bad things are in bank. That's not the way it is.
Uh-huh.
It's that bank is non-survival stuff.
Right.
You can still have stuff you don't like in subliminal that's reactive. Reactive mind can extend to subliminal, but it's not non-survival.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes, indeed. Bye.
Good week. Bye.
Bye, Alan.